Welcome back. Our guest this week is Tom Constand, CEO of the Brain Injury Association of Michigan, working on the no-fault issue. They're not happy. Our lead story, the governor signs no-fault and MSU has a new president. On the OTR panel, Paul Egan, Shana Roth, and Bill Ballinger sit in with us as we get the inside out, off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
All right, welcome back to Off the Record, and we have the governor signing no fault. So what?
It happened!
Yes!
The thing that honestly, I mean, I've been doing this for a few years. Every year they're like, we're going to do it this year, and then they don't. So I thought this was just our Bill Murray groundhog issue, and they cracked it with a Democratic governor and a Republican-led legislature, which maybe that was the secret sauce. Maybe that's what they actually needed, is they needed both sides to really come together and be forced to come together to get it done. But they
got
it done.
There were two key points in this debate. The scrum that we had on the House floor with the two Republican leaders where they had a chance to pass a bill and let her veto it, and they decided not to. Major, major turning point. Secondly, inside the meetings, there were two or three times that this thing almost blew up. At one point, Ms. Whitmer was over here, Mr. Shirky's over here, and Henry Kissinger, the Speaker of the House in the middle, said, hey guys, let's not let this thing slip away. Let's put it together, and it did. So this is a good get, but not everybody's happy, Paulie.
No, there are Democratic lawmakers that are unhappy. There are medical providers. There are trial attorneys that are unhappy.
The insurance industry is not too pleased either.
That's interesting that you even have them saying that, you know, some of the promises for rate relief may be excessive. We've got to correct some drafting errors and other problems with the bill. So there's certainly reason to, you know, to withhold a lot of exuberant enthusiasm until we see how this plays out.
And unhappy is almost like too muted. I mean, there's at least one Democrat who during the vote said via Twitter, this is the day that I become an independent. Yeah. I mean, there's some Democrats, including into the Detroit area, where they are seeing some of the highest auto insurance rates in the nation. They are mad about this.
Well, I get the feeling from listening to the three of you that maybe this isn't all it's cracked up to be.
It's a true compromise. Everybody's
The word on the island was it's a first step. We're making progress, which is code for we didn't get it totally right. Mm-hmm. But you never do in the legislative
process. Well, are you saying first step in progress toward other things like fix the damn roads, or are you just talking about first step in trying to fix no fault?
Yes, fix no fault.
Well, now
I'm not even sure all of this takes effect. Mm-hmm. Well, that stuff will happen in between.
I detect that you have some reservations. Look, I think it's first of all going to take some time to fully go into effect, and I agree with you. I think let's wait and see what our bills are when we hear from the insurance company about what we have to pay. I mean, can you imagine the hullabaloo a year or two from now if all of a sudden, it's apparent that, in fact, there have been almost no savings across the board? I mean, it will be hell to pay, I think. So, yeah, let's wait and see what happens. This isn't instantaneous. It's not something tomorrow you get instant relief that everybody feels and everybody applauds. We're going to have to wait.
I think you were right last week when you suggested there might be a petition drive on this. I think if you're opposed to this, you got a way to stop this. Why
sure,
not do a petition drive?
Call
I mean, that's become
a referendum, and it freezes the law
until
there can be a public vote in November of 2020. Yes.
And petition drives are almost in vogue lately. I mean, we had very successful ones with marijuana, with redistricting. I think people are really seeing that, like, look, if I really want to get something done, I'm just going to put together a group. I'm going to do it myself.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, the question is, what would that petition drive say? I mean, there's no doubt Gilbert's threatened petition drive, I think, had a lot to do with putting pressure on both sides to compromise and make a deal. But, I mean, do you think if there was a petition drive that said, you know, let's keep the present system in place, do you think that would, Paul,
it doesn't have to say anything. A referendum simply says yes or no to the new law. The new law is set. It's yes or no. This isn't an initiative. Somebody could do that, like that's what Gilbert wanted to do, and now that's off the table. We're talking referendum.
I see. Up or down
it's just
on
like
this,
the emergency
right.
manager law in 2012.
Yes.
So that's what it is. Nobody has to write any language. It's just, do you like this new law or not?
And there is no appropriation in this bill. That
there is
no,
not. Right.
No.
There is not.
No.
All right, so let's turn the page. MSU has a new president. Let's see what that unveiling was like.
The last two MSU presidents were Spartans and did not work out very well. Dr. Luana Simon facing criminal charges in the Larry Nassar case, and interim president John Englert was forced to resign. The campus community, in no uncertain terms, told the MSU board, find a non-Spartan this time, and the board did.
It is my distinct honor to introduce to you the 21st president designee of Michigan State University, Dr. Samuel L. Stanley, Jr.
Medical Dr. Stanley moves to East Lansing after a 10-year stint as head of the Stony Brook University in Long Island. Two of the last nine presidents at MSU were in-house candidates, and former Governor MSU grad Jim Blanchard says it was time for a fresh set of eyes.
I think we've probably been too inbred here in the leadership.
The elephant in the room continues to be Larry Nassar, convicted of sexually abusing hundreds of female victims. After the board voted 8-0 to hire the new outsider, he hit the Nassar issue head on.
It was a terrible tragedy taking place. Really what to me, and particularly as a physician, was a gross and incomprehensible betrayal of trust.
The new president pledged to meet with the survivors to hear their stories and to learn from their experiences, but he advised everyone.
I don't have the ability to change the culture at Michigan State University by myself. It really requires all of us working together.
Over the years, the MSU board has played politics and created great controversies, but the new president demonstrates some political acumen of his own, and he shakes his head while refusing to answer this.
Briggs, where are you on the political spectrum, sir? Are you a Trump Republican? Are you a liberal Democrat? What is you?
I have no, yeah, exactly. I think when I'm president of Michigan State University, I represent all the constituents of Michigan State University. So I've worked with Republicans, worked with Democrats, and I've really stayed away. Maybe that's why I lasted 10 years, but I've really stayed away from making any political statements.
The new president moves onto campus August 1st, and a top priority to begin meeting with those Nassar survivors.
Billy, why'd you laugh at that answer?
Tim, you are mean to
That's
him.
That's not a mean question. Is that not a legitimate question?
I think it's fair, particularly in this political climate, particularly given that all of the Board of Trustees have to know what their political affiliation is.
Diane Byrum says they never asked the question.
Well, I don't
all the people that were interviewed. What are you? Is you a mugwump or whatever?
They could find out if they want to know, for heaven's sakes. I mean, you know, you register by party in New York. There are other ways that they could know whether he's ever given money to a political candidate or whatever. They could find out, and they probably have found out, but they haven't told you, Tim.
Well,
so I don't blame you for asking the question, but you couldn't expect any better answer than he gave, which was like zilch.
I love the head nod. I don't even have the question on. He's no. And Blanchard, I wish we didn't have it. Blanchard was in the fifth row. Blanchard is literally going like this.
No, they can't stop you.
Anyway, so what do you make of this guy? First impression.
Well, you know, probably more important, or at least as important as any political views, was just having no strong alliances with MSU or anybody from the former administration at MSU. I mean, it really seemed like they needed an outsider at this point to come in and make some serious change.
Yep, the last time we had an outsider was 1985 with John DiBiagio.
And that didn't work out too
well.
And
the one before that was Cliff Wharton in 1969.
Yeah, I mean, the results have always been mixed. Somehow, Tim, your alma mater always ends up in a hell of a lot more trouble and speculation and controversy involving presidential succession than the other public universities in Michigan. The others just don't have
that problem.
Part of
the reason is they're so close to that beast downtown.
I think so.
You know, the political waters are tainted. The Red Cedar's got a lot of stuff in it. And apparently bad water for the board.
I think you're right.
Yeah. What did you make of him?
I don't know a whole lot about him. I don't think anybody does, and maybe that's part of the point. I think at the end of the day, is he going to fix MSU? No. Nobody could. What MSU needs right now, essentially, is some level of stability. You know, they've had interim president after interim president. They're still dealing with Engler and his, you know, sort of run as interim president. What they need is somebody who is a safe choice, from what we can tell. He's probably a pretty safe choice. I'm a little surprised, I'm not going to lie, that they went with a male.
Everybody thought it would be a female in town.
And not to say that, like, it needed to be a female or that a female would have been more qualified, but given all of the issues going on at Michigan State and what those topics are, I am surprised that they went with a male. And I'm also surprised that they weren't more transparent about it. I mean, there were people who were very upset and frustrated that, you know, you got our input on some level, but at the end of the day, this was an announcement. You know, the people didn't know going into it who it was going to be.
I think this brings the spotlight once again back to the autonomy that Michigan public universities are granted by our state constitution.
They can do whatever they want.
It can do whatever they want, impervious to meddling by the legislature and the governor. And our laws do not compel presidential searches to be open and transparent. So this was totally behind closed doors. This was the most tightly held secret I've seen kept in a long, long time. I think the only public university that's had any kind of a public search, and it was totally voluntary. They didn't have to do it. Was Oakland University had one. And
they had listed the finalists
and
put them out there?
Yeah, public interview sessions, for heaven's sakes. But, I mean, this thing, and particularly because of the Nassar scandal that Shana just alluded to, there's so much paranoia and suspicion by the victims that, you know, the university is constantly covering things up, and they did for years, and now they've done it again. We didn't know anything about this selection
process.
Two
quick points. There were 19 members on the search committee, and every one of them wanted this guy. And they lobbied the Board of Trustees to get him. I think that's significant. You put 19, that was a diverse group.
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
They were all over a lot. To get them on one page is one thing. But secondly, if you do a little diving into his record at Stony Brook, the graduate union president said, you guys are in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, I saw that.
This guy's not a good manager. He's not. Yeah. He presents well, interviews well, good public relations, but underneath is a guy who's not doesn't know how to run the university. And on top of that, there was a budget deficit there in 2017 of allegedly $35 million. The faculty wasn't so sure that he was leveling with him on the degree, that maybe he just wanted to make some cuts, use that as an excuse. They hired a guy from EMU who came in and said he didn't cook the numbers, but they were grossly overstated. So I asked the university, I said, were you guys aware of this? And the one sentence I got back from the university was, we did a thorough review and we trust his management skills, end of story. So there is another side that is out there, and look, if you've been someplace for 10 years, somebody's not going to like you. Is that fair to say?
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
And if you're making tough decisions, somebody's not going to like
you.
So I put that in perspective.
Correct.
But
we
didn't know that. Instead of asking that question, I would have asked those questions had we known at the time.
Right, absolutely.
And that's what happens when you don't have a completely transparent and open search. I mean, you're not going to know all of the details. And so it's possible that whatever was presented to the committee was great, but that they didn't have access to that information. We just don't know what information they were working with to come to this unanimous decision.
All right, let's follow up on No Fault with our guest. Tom Constand worked in the restaurant industry for 8 years, then worked at the Detroit Convention Bureau and helped to bring the Super Bowl and the Final Four NCAA basketball tourney to Motown. He was then hired by the Brain Injury Association in 2010, but when his son suffered a brain injury, he became the CEO of the group. He holds a degree from MSU. Counselor, welcome to the program. You've been busy reading this legislation. Let's have Paulie get the first shot here.
Sure. Looking at the auto insurance issue from the broader perspective of what's best for all Michigan residents, if you could choose today between having the system that was in place before this bill was passed or having this bill,
which would you choose?
If those were my sole choices, I'd choose what was in place before. It wasn't perfect by any means, but it was better than what was pushed across the finish line yesterday.
What made this new effort deficient in your view?
It creates more problems than it solves. It's ambiguous. There's a lot of ambiguous language in there. And when you have ambiguity in a piece of legislation, there are loopholes in this big enough to drive a truck through. You're going to have challenges by an industry, and it's going to end up in court. And the process that was begun when the term started was fair and just. For the first time, they said, we're going to listen to all parties. We're not going to favor one over the other. We will take our time. We'll be deliberative in our process. And then somewhere along the line, this marathon, somebody decided to turn it into a sprint, a 100-yard dash, and to get it done before the Mackinac Conference, because the optics are phenomenal. If we could announce this at the Mackinac Conference. So somewhere this marathon became a 100-yard dash. And then 2 weeks ago, that 100-yard dash was stopped at about 20 feet, and they said, we're done, we got what we need. And it was passed through without any public discourse or input by any means. It was passed through at the House at 2 in the morning. And I don't care what the issue is. I don't care what chamber it is. I don't care what party it is. If you have a piece of legislation that had to be passed through in the middle of the night, something stinks.
Well, do you think the Dan Gilbert threat to mount a petition drive was also
that was
a key
part of
impetus?
It? Yeah, sure, absolutely.
End?
There was a lot of pressure, and I understand that. It's been years. You mentioned it before when you talked that, you know, we try and get this done, and we just can't get it done. Well, that's because it's complex. It's a Rubik's cube that you're solving here. It's not easy. It's not. A first-term legislator can't come in, as many have tried, and say, you know what, this is ridiculous. I'm going to solve this. What's the problem? I'll be back to you in 2 weeks with a solution. It doesn't work that way.
Is there any language in this legislation that makes it retroactive for some of your clients, that the benefits they're currently getting, could they be reduced by the insurance companies?
Our understanding is that going forward, they could be reduced from the day it's implemented. And that brings up a very key phrase
Let's
that
be
was
clear
added.
Here, just a second. The benefits that they now have, they could lose. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
How?
Yes.
You mean in the future?
In the future,
lose,
right.
Not retroactively. Or
no, our understanding is that in the future, from now, they lose it. There's
but
an element.
Still allowed to have that unlimited coverage. How are they losing benefits?
There are elements in here. That attendant care is an example. Okay, that's going to be regulated to 56 hours. Now, what was added from the time we saw the H3 version, the final amended version, and the piece that the governor actually signed was the following phrase: "This act is ordered to take immediate effect." Now, we were talking before that there are many elements of this bill that have no specific date assigned to it. And assigned claims is one of them. So this raises the question, does that mean that attendant care takes into effect now, that people are given no transitionary period, there's no runway to care for people, that today, even as we speak, insurance industries can take a little test drive of this and begin to refuse care for those elements of this bill that were not assigned a specified date?
Let me take another shot at this to make sure we get this right. Okay, let's say I have a brain injury, and I'm getting $100 a week.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, could that number by the insurance companies be reduced?
Sure.
Well, they could do that now, even without this legislation.
My point is that it's not written, it hasn't solved the problem. There's too much ambiguity in the bill. The bill was designed to, number one, lower the objectives as we understood them to be, was to lower insurance rates and at the same time protect benefits, protect the rights of the injured parties, the citizens. It did neither of those. The savings that we're talking about is anywhere from $15 to $30 a month. That's for somebody in Detroit. It's not about saving them money, it's about making it affordable, and that's an important distinction. You're not saving me anything because I haven't been able to afford $8,000 in the first place. So if you cut off, say, $500 of that $8,000 rent, you think I'm able to afford $7,500? No. I can't afford $6,000. I can't afford $5,000.
Well, we've heard figures like $1,000, $1,500 in savings, not $200 or $300 a year, which is what you're talking about.
I guess we all agree that we're going to have to wait and see just what this happens.
Well, isn't that part of it? I mean, it's going to take a year or two.
It is. Yeah, but in the meantime, the quote, now I come from the marketing and public relations background. Words matter. And the quote yesterday was, when we work together, we get the job done. What job did we get done here? The job has just begun. There's a lot of work to do ahead. And with that, heads were turned and it's now on to Rhodes.
So what is your plan then going forward? Are you guys thinking about filing a lawsuit or challenging the law somehow? Are you thinking about a ballot initiative? What's the plan?
This is a 120-page bill, so we're going to have a summary of it the beginning of next week, and at that point we'll be in a position to determine exactly what the plan is. There's been a lot of speculation. I know you were talking earlier about a referendum. We don't know whether that's the appropriate thing. I'm not going to comment on that right now until we get that summary.
But there's been chatter about that, has there not?
There's been chatter. But I'm not going to. You're very good, Tim, at what you do. But I'm not going to tell you, give you a guess as to what we're going to do.
You and the president,
right?
But let me be clear. Are the CPAN people going to meet next week?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And on the agenda will be, what the heck do we do?
Yeah, exactly. Based on what this bill means.
And if you have a chance to stop this law, why wouldn't you? If it's so onerous.
Again, to quote Washington, D.C., I'm not going to comment on hypotheticals.
Well, but it's not a hypothetical. It's a reality.
We don't know that yet. We need to find out exactly what this bill means. I don't want to step forward and say something and commit to anything when we're not 100% sure of what this bill means.
But you will consider then a petition drive to stop it.
Sure. That would be under consideration.
Well, can you acknowledge that excessive billing by some medical providers has been a big part of the problem? And if that had been more closely controlled and policed, you might not be in this situation.
You bring up a good point. There's no doubt that for years, a few bad apples have now spoiled the whole bunch here. And there's been fraud on all sides, And unfortunate is a term that doesn't do it justice. People have been, I represent the majority of the 16,000 people currently in the no-fault system receiving benefits, those with brain injuries, those with spinal cord injuries. And that's part of my universe of 200,000 individuals currently living in the state with a brain injury. It's those people that are harmed. Those people have been put in harm's way. So this job is not done. This job has just begun. So we will be in Lansing. We will make sure there's a lot of people within the legislature that agree with this notion that this job is not done by any means. Why did we jump off a train that was going at the rate of speed it was intended to go at and assess this thing and look at it from all sides? And all of a sudden it was...
Was it driven in part by the governor's desire to get this thing off of the list and then move on to Rhodes?
In part. I think it was also driven by the frustration amongst many people of the legislature, quite understandably so, that this hasn't been solved. You even alluded to it in your comments earlier. We've been looking at this year after year after year. Darn it, this is going to be the year that we solve this. Well, you didn't solve it. You addressed it. You pushed something over the finish line that's by no means a finished product.
So what do
either
you need
one
to
of the bills, House or Senate, that passed before the leader sat down with Whitmer better than the final version?
No.
So then what do you need? Like, what specifically do you need to see in order for this to be done?
More consumer protection. The rate savings that were guaranteed were only on the PIP portion. There's an obligation to the people in Detroit and Flint and Muskegon and other areas that have been excessively taken advantage of by the unfair rate structure that needs to be put in place. Non-driving rating factors were addressed, but they weren't solved, and it's been discussed. Redlining is still there. You can't use zip codes, but you can use territories. So the 48219 zip code becomes the 48219 territory, or the territory between 7 Mile and Lasser and Evergreen. There's still discrimination that is allowed.
What's wrong with choice in this legislation?
That's a slippery slope. There's nothing wrong inherently with choice. I understand that it's a basic American right for choice. But you don't choose whether you're going to get in an accident. The other thing is that the only criteria that anybody would use when purchasing insurance in terms of choice is, what's the least expensive? That's what's right for me, quote unquote. Well, talk to somebody that's been in an accident who, before that accident, was one of the many people who said, we need choice. I'm being charged too damn much. And now who faces the reality of a lifetime of care and a lifetime of challenge and denial by the insurance industry, whose job it is to maximize shareholder value.
They say Medicare will take care of it.
Really? That's a one-dimensional solution, and I think everybody here knows that. Medicare does not provide Medicaid.
Medicaid
is absolutely, it's a poverty program. So to relegate people to that type of care is 19th century, in my opinion.
As you well know, though, there are many ways to suffer a terrible head injury other than an automobile accident. Mm-hmm. I mean, why should it be only if you are catastrophically injured in a car accident only in Michigan that you would get this kind of lifetime medical coverage?
I'm glad you brought that up. Our mission is to make sure that that type of coverage and care is available and accessible for all persons with a brain injury. If I were working for the Cancer Society, I would want to make sure there's treatment for all persons with all types of cancer. That's kind of the mission of a nonprofit organization, and that's what we do. So what this represented, my son was a perfect example. My son did not sustain his injury from an auto accident. It was in a jet ski accident. But he benefited from the system of care that was so prevalent in the state of Michigan. When he was being released, I was being told by the nurse up north in Petoskey, now you have your choice of rehab facilities. In the west side of the state, you have such and such and such and such. In central Michigan, you have this. In southeast Michigan, where I lived, I had three facilities within 30 minutes of my house. I knew at that time I didn't have that choice if I were in Ohio or Indiana. We'd be driving hours for that kind
of
care.
What percentage of brain injuries come from auto accidents?
It's the second leading cause behind
fall.
What
is
it? About 30%.
30%. So 70% are non-auto.
Yeah.
Okay. Bottom line, this is a bad bill.
As it stands right now, yes. Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you to you all. See you all right here next week on Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.